Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 490. In this episode, Scott talks with Kaya Thomas about computer science in school versus the real world.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I'm chatting with Kaya Thomas, and she is a junior at Dartmouth and has an internship right now. And where are you interning?
I'm interning at Intuit right now.
That's very cool. Are you working on iOS apps?
Yes, I'm working on the Mint app, the financial budgeting planning app.
Mm-hmm. So you're at an impressive school and at an impressive company. But I remember when I was in school, I wasn't too impressed with the kind of programming that we're doing. It was pretty theoretical. But again, I was at a kind of a community college while Dartmouth is a top tier school. What is it like to program in college? And do the professors like really understand what's going on in the real world?
It's really different. I really enjoy it. I think that it's important because I'm getting the foundation. And without it, I don't think I would have been able to transition so easily into the work world. I think that studying computer science, it makes it really easy for me to learn new languages. So for me to learn something new doesn't take as long, I think, if I didn't have that kind of traditional foundation. But I think the difference is working on a team in a real world engineering team where you have a cycle of like a work cycle and you're doing, you know, version control. It's very different than in school where you're taking tests and you do a one-time project and then it's done, right? I think one of the main difference is the maintenance part, because when you learn something in school and you take a class, the class ends, right? But when you're in the real world, you put out a product, it just doesn't end. It continues. It's something that you have to maintain and keep up with. And I think that's a concept that a lot of students miss.
But don't you think that in school, kids could be taught differently? Like, why didn't you, like, welcome to Computer Science 101. Let's talk about source control. You know, I remember when I was in school, we just zipped up our assignments. It was like chapter 1.zip.
Yep.
Okay. So it's like that at Dartmouth too. So I don't feel so bad.
Yeah. No, don't feel bad at all. So there is some classes that use version control, but they only use them for usually like the later group projects. And it's usually a mess. My experience is that students don't understand version control. And it's a horrible experience because no one knows like how to use it and everyone's working on the same thing. So you can never merge correctly. And it just ends up being a disaster. So a lot of the times you do have to literally zip your files, send them, put them on Blackboard or Canvas. And it's very kind of archaic. It would be great if they use version control like right off the bat. But I think the problem is with that is it's overwhelming to learn version control at the same time that you're learning how to just code is really hard. So I think that there's like give and takes. I think when you at Dartmouth, the computer science intro class teaches you a lot of cool things. You learn how to use IDEs. You learn how to create games and different things. And it's a really kind of good intro into coding. But I think there should be something else that's kind of like real world. Like, what's it like to be a real engineer? That would kind of go into version control and understanding how to really work on an engineering team.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that you said it was overwhelming is a reminder to, I think, those of us that are listening who've been doing this for a while, is that there's a lot of moving parts. Like, there's a bunch of context that we just assume people have. Like,
yep.
I just figure I was like born knowing how a JPEG worked or whatever, right?
Yeah.
How much is that, I guess I would call it kind of like ambient knowledge or knowledge that comes in via osmosis? Like, when I was a kid, like period like 13, right? Like I remember messing around in like MS Paint and learning how bitmaps worked and just like doing a hex editor and stuff. But I didn't know what I was doing. I was just poking at bitmaps, right?
Yeah.
But my 13-year-old nephew, he just has a different brain and he just doesn't get it. So how much information did you come with, like, that you just absorbed? And how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that our generation is a little bit different. I think usually how people end up coming across ever having programmed without knowing that they were programming is like via like MySpace and Neopets and stuff like that. And like, that's how, where I'm coming from. My first introduction to any type of coding or programming was literally just copying, pasting HTML on my MySpace page and like changing colors and stuff like that. So I think a lot of people have come across programming like that, but they don't know what it is. They still don't have any context there. But it's not intuitive because when you go to school, it's not that at all. You're not doing HTML. You're not, you know, creating web pages or anything like that. You're okay. Like, how can you create a software that is like, acts like a bank account type of thing like that? Or let's create a game where you have two balls and you need to hit it against the wall. And so it's very different. It's not, it would be great if it was something like, okay, you use Facebook. So how is Facebook made? But it's not like that. I think that the main point is like, just kind of learning the foundation without really connecting it to how they interact with technology every day.
So do you think that classes in college even today are just too abstract? Because like you just said, let's dissect Facebook. Like I could see an entire class where you just like hit F12 tools in the browser and just mess around on Facebook. Like what's going on here? That seems like a cool class. You're not taking that class?
No, well, I would take that class for sure. I think it's cool. There's so much stuff online. Like, let's rebuild Twitter and stuff like that. And there's so many online resources like that. But classes really, I think that's something that, professors, especially because professors tend to be older, they're not necessarily dialed into that space. They're not necessarily using Facebook or Pinterest or Twitter and stuff like that. So they might not necessarily get the value in that, in connecting students to say, hey, look, this is the stuff you use every day. You use apps, you use these websites. You can actually make it. And like, here's how. Let's do this step by step. It's more like, okay, let's teach you the foundation of programming. How do you, you know, what's a hash map? And like, how do you have a for loop? And that's great. You need that to be an engineer, but that's just the very beginning. That's just a surface point.
Isn't that where we lose people though? Because like everything you were saying, there was super interesting until you said hash map. And then I felt my inner teenager be like, ugh. You know what I mean? Like I can just hear people saying, how is this practical? And like, and this is why I think why we end up with a certain personality type in programming, because one kind of person was like, ooh, hash map. What's that? And another one's like, oh man, that's really abstract. Like,
Yeah, it's very true. I think that we miss out on a lot of people who probably would be interested in programming, but just the language is very abstract and confusing and can be just, you lose a lot of people. I've tried to get a lot of my friends to take CS and they just get really disinterested because when I tell them, yeah, like I make apps and like it's so fun, you should definitely try it. You know, you can make websites. And then they take the class, they're like, I thought I was going to be making apps and websites.
So that's my next question to you, that I'm trying to teach my 7-year-old how to build some stuff. And we sat down and, you know, we're on Skype, so you can see me. While the people who are listening can't, we plugged in a what's called a photon and an LED.
Oh, whoa, that's,
you know,
super cool.
So we made it so you push a button and a light turns on. Okay. This took 2 hours. His attention span is not 2 hours. Okay?
Yeah.
So I think that people come into computer science thinking they're going to build a game in a week or two, and they discover it's a year-long process, and they're a little depressed about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's because technology is such an instant thing, right? You expect the process of learning it to be instant as well. And it's not that.
I didn't even think about that, because people sit there and like pull to refresh. Boom, more likes. Like, app building should be that fast.
Exactly. And it's not like that. I think that that's one reason I've seen a lot of people drop out of computer science, because it's such a huge time commitment. You really have to spend the time learning and constantly building your skills. But most people don't really have that attention span, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you tried to get some of your friends involved. Have you had any successes?
Yeah, I actually have. I had some successes. I have I'm a TA and a section leader in the computer science department. So I lead some of the sections for some of the intro courses and some of the upper level courses. And so I've had success of people sticking through it and like just working with people. I think it takes, you know, it takes support, and you need sometimes that mentorship, really. So just trying to support people and let them know that, yes, it's hard, but they can still do it.
Mm-hmm. One of the tactics that I've been taking, and I'm interested in whether you think it's a good idea, is to make it understood to people that coding is power. It is like, it is full on the power to make, the power to change. Is that something that resonates with younger people?
I think it does. It depends on the person. I think that everyone's in a different stage in their life, especially in college. Everyone's at mm-hmm. a different stage. But, for those people who are really, who are really motivated and empowered by the thought that, hey, you can build something and you can launch it and millions of people can be using it and you can impact millions of people's lives all over the world, because, you know, technology is a global thing. I think mm-hmm. those people who are motivated to kind of benefit people's lives in a really innovative way would definitely love that. And that, for me, that's why I love technology so much, because I feel mm-hmm. like whatever I build, whatever I make, I can impact people's lives all over almost instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. So that's a perfect segue to kind of go from where you started, which was MySpace and hacking your own pages.
Yeah.
But you didn't stay as a web programmer, even though you have a great web page and you've got a really nice YouTube channel called Code with Kaya. You are a mobile developer.
Yes, I am. I really love mobile development. For me, the reason why is I started out doing web development and it was fun, but I felt that when I started doing mobile development, that I actually was able to interact with the users as I was developing, not actually talking to them. But as you're developing for mobile, every step of the way is you're thinking about interactivity, right? Every single thing that they're doing, the user is interacting with the app.
I see. Every touch, every click matters.
Exactly. Everything matters. And I felt like, wow, like I feel like the user as I'm making this. And it was really cool because I just didn't get that with web development as much. I just felt like a lot of it was kind of static. I didn't feel like I was really being engaged with what I was doing. But when I was doing mobile, I was like, wow, like I'm thinking about they're going to click here, they're going to do this, they're going to input here. And it was just so interactive.
Right. I think mobile apps are expected to be animated and have a lot of motion and a lot of movement. Well, I feel like there's websites that are like brochures.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's like web apps, and a lot of web apps, we don't see them as users. You know, a lot of web apps, they're behind the enterprise. They're behind a login.
Exactly.
Okay. So I thought that Swift is the new hotness, but you are not into Swift. You do Objective-C. Objective-C is not exactly a friendly-looking language for a new developer.
No, it's not. So I started iOS just when Swift came out, just after kind of the announcements. And mm-hmm. I had started learning it and everything. But weirdly enough, Objective-C just, I love it. I actually took a class in C and I was like obsessed. I was super hype about it. I think for me, the reason why I love it, Objective-C, is you really know what's going on the entire time, right? You have to really keep up with it. There's no like, you don't, with Swift and with some other languages similar, like JavaScript and Python, you can kind of code and not really know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So you don't know what's really going on in the background. You have no idea what memory is. Like, you don't know really what types you're playing around with. And so I think with Objective-C, because it's so verbose, it forces you to really know what you're doing at every step of the way. And I love that. I love knowing what's going on and really being intentional in the things that I'm creating.
That's really interesting, because that's kind of the opposite of what I hear from a lot of younger developers. I love that you're saying all of that, because that makes you a plumber, right? Like,
yep.
There are people who turn the faucet, and then there are the people who know what happens when you turn the faucet. And you're
exactly.
saying that you actually enjoy the intentionality of that, which is surprising to me, but heartening also.
Yeah, no, I definitely do. And I agree. I have our intro class at Dartmouth is in Python, and people love it because it's really easy to learn. Mm-hmm. And then when they get to the upper level class, which is in C, they kind of just like are just like, no, I can't do this. This is terrible. But I was kind of the opposite, which was really fun.
I want to take a second to tell you about my sponsor, Raygun. If you want to detect and diagnose errors and crashes in your software, and even find problems that you didn't know existed to improve your software, then Raygun is likely perfect for you. You just add a few lines of code to your application, and in minutes you get real-time error reports with all the information that you need to fix bugs fast. You can even hook it up to your team chat, your bug tracking, and any other development workflow tools. Raygun covers all major web and mobile programming languages, including .NET, the full Xamarin stack, JavaScript, and many more. Go check out Raygun today at raygun.io. I even use it myself on my little startup, and I really, truly recommend this product. It's a fantastic product. Check it out, Raygun at raygun.io. So we hear this word full stack developer all the time, and I think it's funny because full stack developer, when people say it, they mean like UI to database, you know, but I kind of like, when I think full stack developer, I'm like all the way down to the metal. Like I want to know what's happening in the registers, in the processor.
Oh, wow.
You know, like how far down do you typically go in your classes? Cause you've taken computational linguistics, you've taken software design, like you've gone all the way down to discrete math. Did you spend any time in assembler and things like that at Dartmouth?
No. So they don't, teach assembly anymore. I don't think. I think maybe in maybe some of the security classes, they might do some assembly. In the class that I took that was in C, which was software design and implementation, we did talk a little bit about assembly, about what happens when you actually compile C code. And that was pretty cool, but we actually don't get bare bones that down into it. There are some hardware courses in the engineering department you can probably take. But for me, I think as far as I like to go is like databases.
Okay. So you got your internship to at Intuit working on Mint as a part of being a Code 2040 fellow.
Yes, yes, I did. So Code 2040 is an organization that matches Black and Latino undergraduate or graduate computer science students with internships in Silicon Valley. So I wanted to be a fellow really bad. So they were able to get into it on as a partner. And it was really, really exciting. So they matched me and it was really great.
So talk to me about like that first day, right? Like you've got all the computer science in your brain, but I assume that you've started to figure out the difference between computer science and software engineering.
Yeah, I was pretty nervous. I think that I had an internship last summer as well, actually, but it was different because I was doing a solo project. So I wasn't working with a team. So I really could kind of just do whatever. There was no code reviews, but it was a great experience. It was just very different. And I knew coming into Intuit, I was going to have code reviews. I was going to be on a team. I was going to be responsible for a lot. And I was going to have to learn from a huge code base that already existed. So I think for me, I was pretty nervous, but luckily the team that I'm on is really amazing. And they were just so helpful and welcoming through that process of learning the code base. I think a lot of times what I found is like I was getting ready to create something and it already existed. So just understanding what's there and what isn't.
So would you agree that to be a good programmer is less about writing code and more about learning to read?
Oh, yes, for sure. Honestly, like you're going to write code, a lot of code. But yes, a lot of times, especially when you're working on an existing project, you're going to have to go through other people's code and understand it. And that's so important. I think one of the reasons I love being a TA and being a section leader is I grade code. And so I'm constantly learning how to understand different types of people's coding styles. And that's so important. When I've gotten to the work world, I think onboarding and understanding the code base happened so much faster because I was just so used to reading other people's code.
If you wouldn't mind, give me an idea of a kind of task. Like, you know, I'm imagining a while back, you're a couple weeks into it, you've started to get a general sense, and then someone assigns you a task. Are they using Scrum? Is there a sprint? Are they giving you a couple weeks to solve the problem?
Yeah, so we work on sprint. We're doing the Scrum system. We also work on sprints. So we have like 2 week sprints where you'll have tasks that you are assigned and you need to get done, and daily scrums to keep you accountable to make sure that you're doing the work. And when I first started off, I was doing a lot of bug fixes, right? So really getting in, understanding how to interact with the code, how to fix little things. And then like once I got past that point and they saw that I was really capable of doing more, I started working on feature additions and working on new stuff that's going to be in the app.
Okay. And are you doing everything from the back end all the way up through interaction stuff and like like a bug might be that this button didn't do what I expected to do, or is it error handling? What kind of stuff are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not doing any backend stuff. So how they have it separate, there's like a whole platform team that does a lot of the server end and the database side stuff. And then for us, we're mainly doing the interaction and the front end work and seeing how the user is going to engage with it.
Mm-hmm. And that's all done in Objective-C, like you said.
Yes, yes. And I have gotten to interact with Swift a little bit. What they're doing over here is that if there's anything new created, it's going to be in Swift, but anything old is maintained in Objective-C. And I've seen a lot of other teams do that as well. And it's actually really cool. So you get to interact with both because you're allowed to combine Objective-C and Swift. So it's like a good way to kind of slowly move towards Swift.
Oh, okay. I don't know much about this. Can you have an app that has a little bit of Objective-C and Swift combined in the same app?
Yep. Yep. You can interchange between Objective-C and Swift. I think that's a really cool thing that they've done. And it's really easy to kind of use functions and things and methods and classes that you have in Objective-C in your Swift code.
Okay, cool. So you not only work on the Mint iOS team as an intern, but you also have your own app in the App Store. Do you have more than one app in the App Store?
No, I just have one currently.
And your app is a book resource application called WeRead2. And you wrote that in Objective-C as well?
Yes, I wrote that in Objective-C. I've been thinking about migrating it to Swift, but for now, like right now, the maintenance and everything is in Objective-C.
Mm-hmm. And your app right now, which is an amazing accomplishment, has 5-star rankings, which means that you either have a lot of really happy users or a lot of really cool friends, because I don't see a lot of 5-star apps.
Yeah, I hope it's a little bit of both.
So talk to me about this app and how you wrote it and what the back end for that is. Cause you did the full app from design all the way to the back end.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a cool, really cool process because I had to do everything. So the app itself is, a book resource application. It's kind of like a book directory, of children's and young adult books, all written by authors of color. And I created it because I've always been a book junkie. I love reading. I love learning. But as I got older, I saw that a lot of the books that I was reading or even being marketed to me as a teen and a young person, they didn't really have characters that represented me. So there was no black female characters who were like nerdy and always doing things that I did. So I felt that there had to be those books out there, but it's just hard to find them. So I created this resource so that hopefully there's a central location here for people to find these books.
And is that this is curated by you?
Yeah, it's curated by me. So it took a lot of research. I did about like a month where I was just looking for these books and gathering them and, you know, making sure I wanted to make sure the authors were people of color as well. So that they're writing from their own like culture and experiences. So it took a long time to kind of curate the books.
So is the list static or does it pull from a back-end service?
It pulls from backend. So I'm using Parse as the backend, and it was actually so, so great to use Parse because I didn't have, you know, too much experience in databases and backend work, but they really make it easy to understand how to, you know, integrate with the backend. Their SDK for iOS is really good. So I put all the books up on there and it's pulling. It's nice. So anytime I add a book, you can just reload and it'll be right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, backend as a service, I think they call that, right? So you don't even have to think about the database at all.
Exactly.
Now, I understand that you're struggling with one aspect of the iPhone store. Right now, even though this is a book for kids, it says the iPhone people are insisting that you must be 17-year-olds to download this app. And that's kind of one of the things you have to deal with when you have a walled garden like this, a curated garden.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so I was really disappointed in that I had to rate it so high because it made some parents weary of it. They were like, wait, why is this app rated 17 and up? Is there like something in there that my kids shouldn't see? And really, it's not. It's just because when you go to any of the books, you can see the Safari page. You can just go straight to the Amazon page of the book. And because I allow you that kind of undirected access to Safari, they rated the app 17 plus, which I understand because parents don't necessarily want their kids having access to the internet just without their guidance. But it was kind of disappointing because it is an app that I want teens and kids to be able to, you know, look for books when they're in the library and stuff like that or in the bookstore.
Have you thought about ways to get around that? Like, do you launch into Safari, or do you have like a constrained web view that you can prevent them from going places that they shouldn't go?
Yeah. So it's funny. When I actually first made the app, I had a web view inside the application, and it didn't allow you to go into Safari. It was just straight web view, but my app got rejected because of that. They don't allow you, because it's Amazon, you can buy from the Safari page, and technically that's like in-app purchasing. So,
oh man.
Yeah,
that sucks. They just make us jump through so many hoops.
Yep. It's an interesting process to, you know, go through the whole review and submittal process. It actually caused me to really think a lot about kind of what I was making and like how I was going to get it out there.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of being out there, in addition to all this different stuff that you're doing, you're going to school, you're working it into it, you're doing an app on the side. You also have a YouTube channel called Code with Kaya. You've got tutorials and vlogs and resources and stuff like that. What do you think is driving you to be so, I don't know, just like public and gregarious? Like, some people just code and they do their thing and they go home. Why are you so excited about this? That you just, it seems like you're overflowing with enthusiasm about software.
Yeah, no, I really love it. I think for me, the reason why I've kind of made the intention of being so out there and public with the work that I'm doing is because I want other young people, especially young people of color, to really see that this is something that they can be excited about. And like, if you're excited about technology, if you're excited about nerdy things and you want to create, like, don't be ashamed. Like, go for it. Do it. And like, if you have an idea, just try to learn as much as you can and make it. And I think that's why I've really been so passionate about trying to get myself out there and try to have resources for people to understand that they can make the things that they use every day. I think that for me, it was really transformative to start making technology because I've always been so obsessed with technology my entire life. I've loved it so much. And now that I'm actually creating that same technology, I just really feel so powerful. And I want everyone else to really, especially young people of color, to really feel that too. I want them to feel empowered.
Mm-hmm. You did a really great article. You wrote an article for a website called Model View Culture, and we actually had them on the podcast before, called Where Are the Women in Color Hackers in Movies? And, you know, I think that as a, you know, I was a random white guy. I don't really think about it when a bunch of random white guys do something cool in a movie. But you call it a really interesting example in the movie, The Fast and the Furious, where they're looking for this like mysterious hacker. And who does the mysterious hacker end up being?
So it was crazy. I was watching the movie and I wasn't really that too engaged in the movie. I was kind of bored with it. And then they're talking about this hacker and they started talking about this really cool, like biohack security technology that this person had made. And then they go and find the person and it turns out it's a black woman. And that just blew my mind. I never saw in like a movie, especially like a black woman hacker created the software that just like was central in the whole film. It really made me so happy. And I was like with my friends and I'm getting all giddy and they're all laughing.
Well, suddenly you kind of sat up and you're like, wait a second, I am engaged in this movie all of a sudden.
Exactly. All of a sudden, I was so excited for the movie. And like, I was like, oh my God, like all my friends were like, wow, of course, like Kai's freaking out about this because they know like I'm a computer science freak. So it was so fun.
Well, I think what's cool about that was that then Tyrese, who's in Fast and the Furious 7, says, well, you're not what a hacker is supposed to look like.
Yeah, it was this really like weird conversation they end up having. So after they captured her or found her or whatever, Tyrese is like, cause like he's attracted to her. So he's like, you're not what a hacker looks like. You're like, you shouldn't be behind a computer. You should be like my girlfriend, basically. Like that's basically what he was saying. But then Ludacris's character actually stood up for her and was like, wait, like, cause he is also playing like a computer hacker guy. And like, he was like, wait, so what is a hacker supposed to look like? And I think it was really, really cool. I don't know if the audience really caught it, or I feel like anyone in tech would probably catch that and like feel like, whoa, like, you know,
it's meaningful though, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really meaningful to me because it's like it kind of went against the stereotype. It was like, hey, look, anyone could be a hacker. Like, it's not about, usually in movies, it's usually like a 16-year-old like white guy and like and that's fine, but it's really great that they had this kind of contrary and this disrupting the stereotype.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It doesn't hurt anybody to be a little bit more inclusive and a little bit more representative with things like this. Have you watched the show Mr. Robot?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so this is good because now I get to do this publicly because, you know, when you love something and you're a nerd, right? So then you want to share it with people. And
yes.
When you find something amazing, not only do you want to share it with people, but you want to like sit with them watch that thing, right?
Yes.
So I'm ready to like, you need to watch Mr. Robot.
Okay.
You call me, I will watch you watch Mr. Robot.
Okay, great.
Okay. And then when you have a really great experience, what you're like, oh my, and then you look around like, oh my goodness, did you see that? I will be there. And I'll be like, I know. Mr. Robot is this really great hacker show on USA. And it has a lot of really fully fleshed out characters. And there's one woman who's a hijabi, who's a hacker. Wow. And she's not a terrorist. She's she's an actual human being. She just happens to be a hijabi and she's part of the larger hacker culture. And the hacker group is, you know, run by a woman. So it looks like a bunch of our nerdy friends. And
oh, that is awesome. I'm definitely interested in watching that.
And the best part about it is that all the hacks they do are actually legit hacks. Like, it's not like Scorpion. It's not like fake hacks. You see what I'm saying? Like, they want to figure out how to break into a building and mess with the environmental controls. So they actually code and create a Raspberry Pi thing. And then they connect the Raspberry Pi to the environmental controls to bring the temperature up to like burn the backups.
Whoa. Okay.
You know what I mean?
That is something I definitely have to see. Cause one thing I've seen in every movie that like has a hacker or anything about computer science, it's never real actual coding or computer science. Mm-mm. They usually are just like fiercely typing and then like something happens. So.
Oh gosh. Or they have like two keyboards and like one guy is like moving his hands up and down, typing on two keyboards. And then there's that whole legendary scene from CSI where the girl is like, I'm going to make a GUI with Visual Basic to track the bad guy's IP address. And you literally like hurt yourself face palming.
I know, because it's not realistic at all. That show sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to check that out.
So this is cool. You're going to like Mr. Robot. The best thing about Mr. Robot is that the titles are actually like the names of torrents. So it's like the name of the show, like episode zero is like called like viewsource.mkv.
Oh my gosh. That is insane.
Spread the word around Intuit and around Dartmouth.
I will, for sure.
Very cool. And we will keep spreading the word about some of the great stuff that you're doing. And people can find you up at KayaThomas.com, I think, right? Don't you have that redirecting?
KayaThomas.info.
.info. And that goes up to your GitHub page. And also, congratulations on being featured in a lot of news reports on the recent meme, I Look Like an Engineer.
Oh, thank you so much.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.